From Studio J, 10 stories above K Street, this is the Education Gadfly Show.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who was nearly fired last week by Attorney General Gonzalez, Rick Hess.
Man, that Gonzalez is one short, fidgety, pudgety, unhappy-looking guy.
And willing to fire people.
Apparently.
I thought you'd like that. You're all into firing people.
Did you hear how he took responsibility? I thought that was pretty stellar kind of example. I take responsibility for everything that happened to the department, even though I had no involvement and knew nothing about what went down.
Yeah. And I think that the decision was fine. So, yes. Next question.
I think, you know, there were mistakes made, but the outcomes were fine.
Yeah.
If any of my students ever tried this stuff, I take responsibility for plagiarism, even though I don't know how the pen got in my hand and I didn't mean to copy it. I would have beat the kid upside the head.
Now, Rick, I believe that our first Education Gadfly show is – we're coming up on our first anniversary. And I remember this because we had Nina Reese on early on in our lifetime as a show. And you said how she was like a mid-major college basketball team.
Like George Mason?
Like George Mason. And it is March Madness again.
Holy cow. It's been a whole year of this.
I think April 6th.
April 6th. Coming up on our anniversary.
My God, you know, speaking of which – and we've apparently changed the voiceover at the beginning of the show. I noticed this when I was listening. What, that was scary. Who is that person and what are they saying?
Kobe? I don't know anything about this.
Was that Copes?
I tell you the truth, I don't know anything about this, but I take full responsibility
for
the content of this show.
So who do you like? Do you think any of the elite academic schools are going to win?
I was going to ask you if there were any mid-majors that were going to go all the way this time.
You know what's funny is Princeton always used to clean up in the Ivy League and get that bid and then get its butt handed to it.
Yeah.
In the last 3 years, it's been UPenn.
Yeah.
I'm pulling for the fighting Quakers to go get it done.
My strategy this time in our office pool is to root for teams I hate. So I'm pulling for Duke to go all the way.
Now, why are you pulling for teams you hate?
Because in the past, I've been ruled by emotion and I root against those teams even when they're good. And then I lose the pool.
But Duke is widely thought to suck this year.
Well, see, that's the problem. But that's why it would be a huge win if they went all the way.
Well said.
I mean, nobody has Duke going all the way.
No, they don't.
This is a problem when I don't actually watch basketball. So I guess I still owe you that $5, Liam, huh? Mm. Yeah. All right. We'll get to that. All right. Well, listeners, if you have something to tell us, including your own strategy for your NCAA office pool, send us a letter at letters@edexcellence.net.
I like that. Actually, you know, one person I know who's got the whole system cooked is Karen Elsie over at the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. How's that?
She's in three brackets. Uh-huh. She's doing three of these.
Wow.
I think that's a way to stack the odds.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Okay, we're going to get going, Rick, with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have an interview with the Aspen Institute's Gary Huggins, who's going to report on a big NCLB hearing that happened this week in Congress.
Is this the same Gary Huggins, who's director of the Commission on No Child Left Behind?
That would be the one.
Wow.
That is
okay.
Correct.
That's
that
a get, man.
We got big names on
the
show.
That's a get.
That's right.
That's like Leno.
And finally, in-house weirdo Liam will impart some education news of the weird. So, Jen, let's get going with Pardon the Gadfly.
All right. Topic one. ExxonMobil recently donated $125 million to the National Math and Science Initiative, part of which includes paying high school students who pass AP tests and giving cash bonuses to their teachers, too. Mike, should we be bribing students and teachers with bloody oil money?
Yes.
I agree.
Next question. No. We should talk about this.
Okay.
All right. But because it drives me nuts that some people think this is a bad idea. I mean, you know, we believe in incentives in every other part of our life. We're trying to hold schools accountable and give educators incentives to raise achievement. Why shouldn't we give incentives to students to take and pass tough tests?
But you also believe in character formation.
Well, all right. Sure.
Do you believe in churches paying kids who've been sin-free all week?
Well, if you had a way to measure that, but that would be a measurement problem. I mean, so self-reported surveys aren't going to work on that one, right?
So you don't have any fundamental problem with paying kids.
No, like, you know, I think there's a lot of criticism about No Child Left Behind, how there are no consequences or incentives for students. And I think that's true. I think it's helpful when state accountability systems try to incent students to work hard and do things that, you know, might not be seen as in their self-interest in that moment, like working hard and taking tough classes, but that are going to help them and help the country if in the long run.
I think that's a pretty compelling case. I do have to say that I'm totally fine with giving bloody oil money to teachers. Giving bloody oil money to kids, I'm a little bit like, you know, I don't want to pay my kid just to do his work. I want to threaten to beat him if he doesn't.
Ah, I see. So you don't believe in the carrot, but you like the stick.
I like a big stick.
Okay. Jen.
It sounds like this when it hits him on the noggin.
Okay. Rick, please put your big stick away.
I'm just saying. Okay.
All right. 75% of students graduating from ed schools at Michigan's public universities can't find jobs in the state. Yet education remains one of Michigan's most popular majors. Rick, does the Wolverine State need to start cutting its ed school programs regardless of students' demand for them?
Just kidding.
Rick, that's probably very annoying to our listeners. Like somebody's, you know, on the treadmill right now listening to the podcast and they probably lost their balance.
I don't think anybody's working out to
God
the podcast.
God help them if they're working out to the podcast.
That's not true. I think we know people that listen.
Oh, but not while they work out.
Really? I thought they did.
Oh, maybe they do. Right. I don't really know. Actually, what I'm deeply concerned, if anybody is kind of putting us on their speakers and using them as romantic background noise, like lighting candles, cracking a bottle and putting on the podcast.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Then, okay, maybe not so much. No, I mean, I'm okay with it. I mean, if you've got 3 out of 4 people enrolling in teaching programs in Michigan are stupid enough to pay money to get a degree where they get certified to teach in a state which has no employment for them, it's like, meh, you know, you can't outlaw stupid people.
Okay, but why should Michigan taxpayers pay good money to subsidize these programs when, you know, these people are going to be faced with either doing something other than teaching, you know, teaching in schools or leaving the state, right? I mean, if these people want to teach in another state, then why shouldn't Michigan say, fine, you should go to another school in another state and get your training there?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, partly it depends how many of these people are getting degrees undergrad versus master's degrees. Undergrads, the state's probably underwriting a fair bit. Master's degree tend to be cash cows. So it depends a little bit on the mix in terms of how bad the Michigan taxpayers are getting soaked here.
You know, I have had a Michigan teaching certificate once upon a time, and I had to leave the state of Michigan to get a teaching job.
What did you do?
I went to work at this outdoor education center.
No, what did you do that you had to leave the state?
Oh, well, because actually it was just I didn't like the weather.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you did something that
– No. I didn't get run out of town.
Oh, okay.
Rick, you always seem to think that you and I had similar personal histories, and that's where you're wrong. Okay, Jen, next topic.
All right. I'm actually dying to know what your personal relationship to this one is, Mike. So Sports Illustrated didn't send copies of its swimsuit edition to school and public libraries this year. The company says it was only honoring complaints that its swimsuit issues have become too racy. But some librarians and lots of 13-year-old boys are ticked off that they didn't have a say in the matter. Mike, what's the deal?
This is so frustrating. I do admit that back in, I don't know, 5th or 6th grade, I, like every other boy in my class, had cut out little pictures of Christie Brinkley, Cover Girl, and had them in my desk. I was very innocent. There was nothing wrong with that.
You cut them out of the school library's
copy? Well, I don't know. That's what I can't remember. I don't know where I found those pictures or not. But bottom line is, look, come on. This is just more nanny state thing. If the libraries don't want to put the swimsuit issue out, they can make that choice. But the swimsuit, you know, but Sports Illustrated made a unilateral decision to not even send the magazines.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, especially if you want to see hot nannies in bikinis, where are you going to go? You know, I think that you're right to point out the fundamental problem here. The reason I think the Ed Trust is going to step into this, though, is that what we've got here is really a classist and racist dimension to it.
Uh-huh.
Think about which kids can afford subscriptions to their very own Sports Illustrated.
Exactly.
And whose parents are permissive enough. You know who it is? It's northern, suburban kids with discretionary income are getting all kinds of – you know, and they can also probably sneak off and shop with the Playboy now and then. It's the kids who are in the urban core who don't have discretionary money to get Sports Illustrated issues who aren't going to have any pictures of good-looking gals in bikinis.
This is an equity issue.
It is the worst kind of equity issue.
And I understand that Victoria's Secret catalogs, they don't even send those to the inner city.
No. They send those things by zip code. So we get about 14 a week. Because Jolene, you know, buys from those guys.
Oh, sure, because of Jolene.
And I got to say, that's all kinds of good reading. I used to read many more books before Jolene started getting those things. But, you know, I want to know how many 13-year-old boys living in Watts or D.C. are going to get a whole lot of Victoria's Secret catalogs showing up for their perusal.
Yeah. Have you ordered anything for Jolene from Victoria's Secret?
No, but she orders stuff for herself. Mm.
It's kind of embarrassing to go into a Victoria's Secret to shop, you know, around Valentine's Day for your wife.
Have you bought Megan stuff at once?
Yeah, yeah. It's embarrassing.
Really? How do you know, like, what size she is?
It's let me just put it. It's a little embarrassing.
Do you, like, ask her before you go what size she is? Or do you, like, tell the girl behind the counter she looks a little bit like you? How do you know what to get?
I have my ways. Well, you can look and see what, you know, what her other size or other clothes are.
How do you do that?
We look in her closet.
Oh. Oh, that's clever. You're good.
Rick, you really didn't know that.
You could be a detective, dude.
Rick. Well, someday if you're going to get married, you're going to have to know these things, Rick. If that's ever going to happen.
Hey. We're getting closer every day.
Okay, we got our interview now with the Aspen Institute's Gary Huggins. Let's take a listen. We're here today with Gary Huggins. Gary is the director of the Aspen Institute's Commission on No Child Left Behind. Gary, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So, Gary, my first question I have to ask you is, you know, you've now worked at the Aspen Institute for, close to a year?
Right.
And I want to know, how many times have you gotten to go to Aspen, Colorado?
Zero.
All right. Now, Gary, I got to tell you, if I worked for the Aspen Institute and I had not yet gotten to go to Aspen, I would raise a little hell about that.
Well, a fair point. That will be rectified in July, I'll insist. And they do have a nice campus in Wye, Maryland, on the Wye River that we've been to a few times.
Yeah. Okay. Has anybody heard about Wye, Maryland? No.
I don't know why not.
But let me tell you, that was good, Gary. That was a good one. Aspen is nice. Boy, whew, that is a nice spot to have a meeting. Well, okay, Gary, you are on the show today because we are curious about an event that happened yesterday. A bunch of the heads of education associations testified at a joint hearing on Capitol Hill, a joint House and Senate hearing. And you were there, and we're curious about your thoughts about that hearing. So let's start with this. First of all, who was it that testified before Congress?
It was Governor Barnes for the commission, Reg Weaver from the National Education Association, Ed McElroy from the AFT. Elizabeth Burmaster was there representing the Council of Chief State School Officers, and Art Rothkopf from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, so...
Oh, and pardon me, Wade Henderson from the U.S. Conference on Civil Rights.
Okay. So this is a big kickoff hearing on No Child Left Behind. We had sort of the education establishment plus civil rights plus business, at least small business, through the U.S. Chamber. And then we had the commission there. I guess that Roy Barnes then was the closest that we had to any kind of reform voice there on the panel.
I would say Roy Barnes and I would say there were three that would be fair to count that way. I would count Roy Barnes that way. I would count Wade Henderson, and I would count the chamber, Art Rothkopf, as well.
Okay.
And the chamber is taking a more significant role than they've done in the past, and I think they've got their finger on some meaningful reform ideas as well.
Okay. All right. So what did you hear yesterday then that echoed any of the proposals that the No Child Left Behind Commission made a few weeks ago?
I think that there's sort of two big headlines. As you guys know well, everyone is out there talking about wanting growth models. It sort of became clear in that hearing that not everyone knows what they mean by that. We mean growth to proficiency, and we felt like there was a lot of serious discussion about growth to proficiency, not any forward movement.
Okay, so hold on. Let's explain this just for a second here. So by this we mean that there's a goal to get all students to proficiency, and we're going to give credit to schools if they're making significant growth towards that end, even if they don't have all their kids to proficiency quite yet.
Correct.
Okay.
If they've not reached that absolute bar. I guess our distinction where we would get prescriptive on that is that we mean that students have to be on trajectory to be proficient in no more than 3 years.
In no more than 3 years. Okay, good. What else did you hear that sounded good to you?
Well, it's sort of a related issue. When you do growth models and you follow students year to year and you have that data, you also have the data to measure teacher effects. And something that's really important to the commission is this idea of bringing effectiveness into the discussion of making judgments on teacher quality.
Did anybody else...
improvement in student test scores to judge how well teachers are doing.
Now, did any of those people at the hearing make that proposal?
No.
Okay.
Although I would say that... that the idea of bringing effectiveness into the discussion is absolutely supported by the chamber and something that that the Conference on Civil Rights is very open to. The other three organizations were not interested in that proposal.
Well, I have to admit that, Gary, on this one, I disagree with you. Not that we shouldn't measure teacher effectiveness based on student achievement results, just that it's crazy to get Washington to try to do this. It's made such a mess of the highly qualified teachers provision, and I don't see how you get it right with highly qualified and effective teachers, at least not from the federal level.
But can I differ with you on that, Michael, before we move on? The difference I see is that we're focusing on something more meaningful, because you're right about HQT. We heard that out there as we talked to people all over the country, that HQT didn't mean anything.
Which means highly qualified teachers.
Certifications, and it was focused on, degrees and those kinds of things. But when you focus it on effectiveness and you're using actual data, in the commission's mind, that actually moves it to a meaningful discussion.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. So you heard from certainly the heads of the teachers' unions. Did you hear from them basically that they hate No Child Left Behind and they want this thing thrown out? What was their message?
Not far from that. I mean, here's what was clear, at least from the members of Congress in the House and Senate in that hearing, that NCLB is here to stay. And it's not clear yet whether it's going to be significantly improved or significantly gutted. And there are forces out there that I would argue what they're proposing would significantly gut No Child. So I think that the forces for reform have to be active and serious and stay in the game and support improving No Child. There's significant improvements that need to be made, for sure.
Right. Okay. Well, Gary, thank you for that report. Gary Huggins from the Aspen Institute's Commission on No Child Left Behind. Thanks for joining the Education Gadfly Show.
Thanks very much, Michael. I appreciate that.
So, Rick, what do you think here? This highly qualified and effective teachers thing, should Uncle Sam get involved in this? Okay, that's really annoying.
What the hell were they thinking? You know, I mean, it strikes me that the real value of the Aspen Institute's commission here, could it have been that they could have stepped in and said, look, we're not running for office. We don't have to sit here and kowtow to all the proper niceties that every folks have laid out. We could talk about what an adult, mature, responsible education accountability system looks like, and it's not premised on utopian silliness. It's premised on what works. Instead, they came out, they embraced everything that's dysfunctional about NCLB and layered on a whole bunch more layers of procedure and wish listing.
Yeah.
I think it's a huge lost opportunity.
Well, and because many of the education groups hate the ideas that are in this commission report, they think they were successful, that they have seized their reform mantle because they're pushing things that the unions don't like. But unfortunately, the unions might be right on this one.
Unions don't like a lot of things, some bad, some good.
Yeah.
What they've really done is they've managed to do something that's so poorly constructed that not only do the usual suspects not like the unions, but those of us who normally like this kind of stuff also think it's a bad idea.
Yep. Okay, time for everybody's favorite education news of the weird with our specially weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
Last week, News of the Weird reported on three girls who were suspended from John Jay High School in New York after promising administrators that they wouldn't use the word vagina while performing part of the play The Vagina Monologues, and then did it anyway, saying, quote, "My short skirt is a liberation flag in the women's army. I declare these streets, any streets, my vagina's country."
William, unquote. Are you asleep, babe? Dude, that is about the worst reading of News of the Weird I've ever heard. Put a little personality into it. My short skirt is a liberation flag in the woman's army. I declare these streets, any streets, my vagina's country. I mean, this is top shelf, baby. Sing it. Make it hum.
We also reported that Eve Ensler, the play's author, placed a phone call to the suspended girls and thanked them for being, quote, vagina warriors, unquote. Well, all sorts of juicy details have since developed. For one, the school's faculty has circulated a letter supporting the girls and applauding them for their, quote, courage, insight, and social responsibility, unquote. Then, the three girls appeared on the Today Show, although News of the Weird is not sure if Matt Lauer ever used the word vagina. Then, it was reported that Ensler, who called the suspensions, quote, a throwback to the Dark Ages, unquote, will actually appear with the three students and host a discussion at their school on March 28th. And, most recently, the girls' suspensions were rescinded. Rick, any thoughts?
Liam, did you see the Today Show when the girls were on?
I YouTubed it and I couldn't find it.
Did anybody see it? Are they good-looking girls or not?
Rick, that does not matter.
I was actually going to say that makes all the difference. This is an entirely different story if they're really attractive than if they're not.
Rick.
I'm just saying.
Rick.
You could probably Google Eve Ensler.
I can't believe. Look at that. Look how famous they got. And I can't – this is great stuff.
You know, at the same time this is going on, of course, this coming week there's going to be a Supreme Court case about the bong hits for Jesus free speech case. This was a kid – we're going to talk about this next week. A kid held up a banner that says bong hits for Jesus. Now there's a Supreme Court case about whether he should have been suspended. But I think it would have been more – you know, so that's bizarre as it is, but it would have been even more fun if the Supreme Court case was about the vagina monologues.
I'm just shocked that telling teenage girls you don't want them to say vagina in a play you're putting on in a public school is deemed a throwback to the dark ages.
Yeah.
I think Eve Ensler needs to get a life.
Well, Liam, you know, for recycling material, that was all right. But Rick is right. You need to get some rest.
Dude, you got to – what happened? You're usually so full of panache in life.
I've been working hard today.
Which is unusual for Liam. So it does tend to tax
me. Why are you looking at my shoes?
More at your socks, man.
What's wrong with them?
You look. I don't even want to go there. Anyway.
All right. That is all the time we have for this week. We'll find out what's up with Liam's socks next week. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Signing off.